Laudator Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and welcome to the program. I'm Sister Janet Ferns. The issue of gay adoption is currently arousing a great deal of concern for many in Britain. In today's programme, we hear more from an English Member of Parliament and a Scottish philosophy professor as they struggle to ensure that the law allows freedom of conscience. What do Cistercians, printer cartridges and laser monks have in common? Keep right on listening. But first, Catherine Smybert tells us what the Pope had to say in today's general audience.
In his current series contemplating some of the Church's first apostles and evangelizers, the Holy Father's catechesis this week featured the example of a married couple, mentioned six times in the New Testament.
We consider a married couple, Priscilla and Aquila, who played an active part in the early Church, and particularly in the ministry of St. Paul. The apostle first met them in exile in Corinth, and then again in Ephesus, and finally in Rome.
Pope Benedict says it's clear the couple were dear to St. Paul and were earnest and effective in spreading the good news of Christ and his saving work. The Holy Father holds the pair up as an example of spiritual devotion and said that they're proof that Christian spouses are a foundation of the Church.
At Ephesus, they instructed Apollos in the faith. And in every city, they opened their home to the local Christian community for worship. Paul praises them in his letter to the Romans as his fellow workers in Christ Jesus, who risked their necks for my life, to whom not only I, but also all the churches of the Gentiles give thanks.
Pope Benedict notes how this remarkable tribute by St. Paul bespeaks great influence of this couple in the Apostolic Church and reminds us that we ourselves have received the faith through the witness of countless committed Christians like them.
Priscilla and Aquila show us the important role played by married couples in the life of the Church. Every home is called to become a domestic church in which family life is completely centered on the Lordship of Christ, and the love of husband and wife mirrors the mystery of Christ's love for the Church, his bride.
The Pope's prayers for more evangelization for Christ's kingdom were heard prior to the audience itself, however, when he met with pilgrims from the Lombardia region of Italy, here to accompany their bishops for their ad limina meeting.
La Chiesa che vive in Lombardia.
The Pope spoke to them about the vibrant faith as lived by the people of this region and the important role the Church plays for all society here. He again underlined the necessity of each Christian's task to spread the good news, especially amidst a more consumerist and hedonistic, secularist and individualistic culture. He said that the resources to overcome this can be found in the family values of this region's people and encouraged them to take action in defending these, as well as to promote a culture of life and to aim for greater conversion of heart.
Trasmettere la fiaccola della fede alle future generazioni.
The Pope recognises that it's a difficult task, but that we can find consistent comfort for it in God's words when he tells us that he'll always be there with us until the end of time.
Upon all of you, I invoke God's blessings of joy and peace.
At the conclusion of his audience address, the Pope imparted his apostolic blessing upon the crowd. I'm Catherine Smybert.
Sometimes Cistercian monks must create unusual ways of earning their daily bread, as Father Bernard McCoy discovered when he founded Laser Monks. What do Laser Monks and the life of Cistercian monks have in common? Father Bernard McCoy is both a Cistercian monk and the founder of Laser Monks. He explains.
Laser Monks is our online company on the internet where our monastery provides and supplies office products and printer supplies, and we are one of the major competitors in the United States with all of the national retailers and wholesalers.
Most people will have heard of Benedictines making wine, but Cistercians and office supplies? This has to be unique.
It originally came from the question of I had needed a toner cartridge, a laser toner cartridge, for one of my printers at home. And in looking for a replacement, I discovered it was just too incredibly expensive for what I thought was a bunch of black dust. And I said, there must be a better way. And in checking with various manufacturers and wholesale outlets, I discovered there were all sorts of better ways. And I said, gee, if I can save this kind of money for our small monastery, what if we could do that for the rest of the church, for schools, for nonprofit institutions, and ultimately for the, you know, for the business and individual consumer world in general? And when I approached some of these people, they thought, you're really monks? This isn't some kind of California marketing scheme. And we said, no, we really are monks, and we pray 5 hours a day in Gregorian chants and all of that. And he says, so let me get this right. You want to provide supplies at a discount, and then you're going to take that money and use it for charitable works. And I said, yes, but there's one more good thing to our little story, and that's with every purchase, you get a spiritual rebate. The monks are going to pray for you, and I don't think your office retailer ever offered you that.
They pooled the talents already existing within their own Kentucky monastery.
We're a small community. We're only 8 monks, all young. Our average age is 40. But we didn't have the labor force or the great land holdings to be able to support our community. And so we decided what resources we did have, which is, of course, all we could utilize, was who we were as monks.
A company outside the monastery supplies the laser monks with the basic materials, and then the monks start filling the empty printer cartridges.
And that we had some young monks with some ingenuity, either with business or marketing or graphics and design or with media and PR. And we said, well, then probably our best bet is to use those gifts, our talent, to offer a product of some kind that people need. They absolutely have to have, so it's not a luxury kind of item. And that provides us with, you know, a continual kind of income because it's a consumable product that individuals or businesses need, and it was just a perfect fit.
But how do laser monks manage to supply office products and, at the same time, devote themselves to the prayer which, as Cistercians, is their main priority? Father Bernard explains.
There's always that balance that has to be achieved in our life between the various works we do and our life of prayer. I think one of the important ways to answer that from our perspective is the Benedictine and Cistercian monastic life has a catchphrase, if you will, a motto, that's ora et labora, and then the word pax. The Latin words for ora, prayer, labora, work or labor, and then pax for peace. Our prayer and our work come together to bring about peace, both within our community and in the world at large. For us, very much like Adam and Eve originally in the Garden of Eden, we have a productive, creative kind of work that is not only productive of fruits for our table, but the work we do also puts food on other people's tables, the needy throughout the world. And so it's an actual work that we can enjoy, be a part of, support ourselves, and be able to support others. But for us, absolutely prayer and our relationship with God is the priority. The work, Laser Monks itself, is there in order to support that, to keep us able to pray and to keep us able to help others listen for those whispers of God's call.
The monks' personal moments with God is the driving force of Laser Monks.
You absolutely have to have those moments when that is all you're doing and that's where your focus is.
Monks have had to change the ways in which communities support themselves.
Really, up until about the 1950s or 60s, practically all of monastic income projects throughout the world were in some way agriculturally related. It might have been what we would call a value-added product. Maybe they made bread from wheat they grew or produced jam Amargelles from the fruits on their property, but nonetheless it was still agriculturally based. With the declining vocation question over the past 30 to 40 years, our labor forces, of course, are significantly less, and even with those who have significant land holdings, often an agriculturally based income project isn't sufficient to support the community. And so everyone is really having to modernize, or shall we say, aggiornamento, even within our work situations, and catching up with, shall we say, the modern business world in how we can produce something, whatever it may be, a marketable either product or service that is going to be able not only to support us, but in whatever form it is obviously not something that would be inappropriate for a monastery.
Father Bernard sees laser monks as being one way in which the ancient involvement of monks in printing can be brought into the 21st century and be of relevance to people today.
Well, my brothers in the 1100s were making paper, making their own ink, copying manuscripts. We've been in the imaging reproduction business for over 900 years. It's just a slightly newer way of doing it today with toner cartridges.
Laser monks are teaching secular business that genuine concern for the individual human person is good business.
We have consciously taken the Benedictine, the monastic idea of hospitality, our monastic hospitality, which in the Rule of Benedict says that every guest must be received as Christ himself. We translate that monastic hospitality into commerce hospitality with lasermonks.com. Insofar as every guest is to be every guest, every customer, every vendor, every person we work with, including our employees, all of these are to be treated with genuine human dignity as Christ himself. It's the caring attitude towards not only our customers but our vendors, and at the same time, it's the way that we approach the business and the business model itself. We're not out to take money out of your pocketbook. We want to genuinely offer you some savings on things you need, and then you know when you're purchasing from us that you are participating in charity throughout the world. Groups of business leaders within America, the CEO-level groups, often have me now do a keynote address that touches on monks doing business, but how we approach it and how that has affected our organization. And what we're showing, of course, is that that kind of hospitality of genuine human dignity tied with good works is good business.
Father Bernard describes the practical outreach of laser monks, taking the gospel into today's world.
Our monastery, again, is very small. We have a very low overhead with only 10 monks. So that leaves us, significant amounts that we can use in various ways. And what we've tried to do with our charitable giving program is it's twofold. In the first part, on about approximately a monthly basis, we try and find ways regionally, nationally, and internationally to provide care for the body, care for the mind, care for the soul. And within each of those three categories, care for the body of things you might normally think of, food shelters, domestic abuse needs, medical equipment in a rural area, those sorts of things that are really care for the body. Care for the mind includes both intellectual and, shall we say, cultural or appreciation of beauty. So perhaps a scholarship to help a needy student. And that would be not only children or adolescents or those in college, but right now we're helping a young lady who has been offered hospitality at a convent in New York. She's finishing a doctorate relating to the metaphysics of John Henry Newman as her doctoral thesis. And we're helping to support her so that she can have that published. It's something not many people will read, I grant you, but it's an important work in and of itself because of the understanding it can bring about for the good of the church as a whole. Providing art contests or bringing a concert to an area to people who couldn't otherwise afford it or appreciate it. Care for the soul is certainly within the Catholic realm, but also cross-cultural and ecumenical in many ways. Of any way that can help support growth of the spirit and growth of that soul part of the person throughout the world. I'll give you a good example that came up recently that was actually a lot of fun. One of our customers in Santa Fe, New Mexico, had called, and she said she was a fine art consultant, and said, "Father Bernard, I was just in Tibet at a Buddhist monastery that takes in orphans, but they don't have money to feed and clothe the orphans. Could you help provide for that?" And I thought, well, that's a wonderful idea. As we talked about it, though, instead of just sending over a small donation of some kind, we decided to use our resources, what we both could use, to try and do something bigger than that. What finally came of it was she contacted a lot of her high-end art friends who donated art. The Santa Fe Art Galleries provided us space and time, and the and Laser Monks provided for advertising, marketing, and for receptions. And we had a high-end art auction in Santa Fe and raised, you know, 100 times what we could have been able to give.
The issue of the adoption of children by gay couples is a complex issue for British Catholics. Julian Brazier, MP, and Professor John Haldane explain why.
The issue is that the piece of legislation went through Parliament last year, for which the underpinning regulations are about to be published. And the understanding is that this will force any adoption agency to give equal treatment to homosexual couples as to married couples.
Julian Brazier is the Shadow Minister for Transport in the British Parliament, but he is also the co-chairman of the All-Party Committee for Adoption and Fostering. He is, therefore, one of the leaders of the struggle against the proposed legislation, which would give homosexual couples equal adopting rights to heterosexual couples. Professor John Haldane, Professor of Philosophy at Scotland's University of St Andrews, also directs the Centre for Ethics, Philosophy and Public Affairs. He comments,
"The situation that we find ourselves in is in part a result of the state taking over more and more of those agencies of provision that historically would have been created and maintained by different church and other religious groups and voluntary associations."
However, in the current issue of adoption, the concern is more often for the perceived rights of adults than the needs of the child. Professor Haldane continues.
"I think it's certainly the case that not only in relation to adoption, but in relation to reproduction issues, fertility issues, all the issues surrounding IVF and so on, that the people talk a good deal now about reproductive rights and about parental rights and so on. Here in Britain, members of the sort of gay groups have been talking about the rights of gay people to complete their lives by having children and so on. So this is put in terms of the rights of adults rather than the needs of children. Now, in saying that, of course, I recognise that there are people who are attentive to the needs of children, but the general framework and the general style of speaking, the rhetoric that characterises this debate, I think it would be more honest just to say row now, is in terms of the rights of different classes of adults to participate in family life rather than the needs of children to have those ingredients in their lives that make it possible for them to flourish.
Yet, as Julian Brazier points out, the Catholic adoption agencies speak with a particular authority.
the Catholic Children's Society are the most successful adoption agency in Britain. They handle one-third of all the really hard-to-place adoption cases, and they have the lowest failure rate in the country. 97% of their adoptions last right up till the child is 18. So we have here a very successful adoption agency, but one which would not be able to conform with the new regulations. The effect of this is that unless a way forward could be found, the Catholic Adoption Agency will be lost.
Naturally, there was a heated public debate.
As a result of the outcry, the government, which still hasn't published the regulations, but has announced that it's going to give 2 years' grace so that the regulations won't apply for another 2 years. And the hope is that during that time, obviously we in the church here hope that someone will think of a compromise. In the meantime, the news is that in Scotland, which has a separate legal system, this problem is not going to arise. So one possibility people are discussing is that the Scottish branch of the Catholic Children's Society should somehow license the others. In the era of modern technology, that may be possible. But for the moment, we have a 2-year breathing space, and that's the position.
But why Scotland? Professor Haldane explains.
Great Britain is a union of historical nations, principally Scotland and England. In 1999, it was agreed that Scotland should have its own parliament, a lawmaking body based in Edinburgh, but that should exist within the United Kingdom. And there had to be a division of powers so that there are some areas in which the Scottish Parliament is able to make law, and there are other issues in which it is not, so-called reserved powers. But in framing that constitution, if you like, insufficient attention was given to the question, what happens when a law made in Scotland conflicts with or comes under superior law made by Westminster? And we find ourselves in the situation of precisely that just now, because the Scottish Parliament, in legislating in adoption on the issue of adoption, gave assurances to the Catholic Church that they would be exempt from the requirement to provide children to gay couples, that they would have discretion in the matter and that they would not be subject to the law in this respect. And those assurances were given during the debates on this matter, and those assurances were given by the main political parties and agreed to by others and so on. But if this new legislation passes in the Westminster Parliament, this equality legislation, then that will override any assurances given by Scottish ministers and the Scottish Parliament. And so we are facing a really quite difficult situation politically, in addition to whatever one thinks about the moral issues, in which, as it were, whose will is to prevail? Is it to be the will of the Scottish people as represented by their elected figures in the Scottish Parliament, or is it to be the will of the Westminster Parliament? Now, constitutionally, how this, or legally if you like, there's no question but that the Westminster legislation takes precedence. And so whatever is done in the Scottish Parliament will be subject to the terms of Westminster legislation. But that then just forces the question, what is the point of having a Scottish Parliament if it's unable to make legislation on social and other policies? Or if having made passed such law, that law is overridden by the provisions of the Westminster Parliament. So that's where we stand literally at present.
So what happens with the Catholic Members of Parliament and others who oppose the new legislation?
Well, it's putting them in a very difficult position where they're on the government side, in the Labour Party, because Labour is imposing this with a whip. In my party, it's a free vote issue, and when the vote comes to the House, those of us like myself who want to vote against it will be free to do so. In the government side, they won't be free to do so, although I know a number of backbenchers are going to rebel on it.
And what happens if the Labour MPs vote against a whip?
If they vote against a whip, well, if they are members of the government, if they're front benchers, if they're ministers, they would have to resign to do that. If they're backbenchers, then what happens if you vote against a whip as a backbencher always happens. You get less likely to get promoted and you may face other sanctions, but as in the party system in any democratic country.
The Archbishops of Canterbury and York issued a declaration in support of the Catholic Church.
The Church of England Adoption Agency has said that it will agree to the legislation that would require it to make children available to gay couples. So the Church of England is not pressing on its own account the right to determine whether or not a child should be given to a gay couple. And that no doubt reflects in part the views within the Church of England, which are much more sympathetic to or accommodating of the ideas of gay marriage and so on. That said, the two leading prelates of the Church of England, the two primary sees of the Church of England, that is to say the See of Canterbury and the See of York, the Archbishops of Canterbury and of York, the two leading archbishops within the Church of England, wrote a letter to say that they supported the Roman Catholics' right to a conscience in this matter. So they were not so much aligning themselves with the Catholic view about adoption as saying that it is improper to try to legislate in the sphere where there ought to be freedom of conscience. And at that level they were giving support to the Catholic position. But there is also a further factor that is in the minds of the Archbishops of Canterbury and York, as well as in the minds of the leaders of the Roman Catholic Church in Great Britain, which is today it's adoption, tomorrow it may be schooling and other social, it may be hospital services and so on. I mean, there are Catholic hospitals, there are Catholic schools and so on. Is it going to be the case that legislation will be passed that would, for example, force Catholic hospitals to refer abortion services or sex change operations, or indeed might even be required to provide those services themselves, and so on? And I think that the Archbishop of Canterbury and the Archbishop of York are mindful of the fact that while on the issue of gay adoption, there may be support for gay adoption within the Church of England, tomorrow it may be some other issue that is of more immediate effect upon them.
There has been generous support from the Muslims and the Jews in Britain.
That's absolutely correct. There was a very good statement put out by Islamic grouping in this country, by the Muslim Council of Great Britain, saying that they supported the principled stand of the Catholic Church and the two Church of England archbishops who supported us on this very strongly. That was particularly generous of the Islamic community because, of course, though they have the same views on homosexual practices, they have a different concept of marriage and adoption doesn't happen under the Islamic system. So, in a sense, it wasn't their fight, and it's one they could have easily ignored, but they chose to say that they to speak out on our side. I understand also that Jonathan Sachs, the prominent Jewish leader, recent chief rabbi, has also spoken out on our side.
Yes, because all three are people of the book and have a fundamental respect for life.
Well, that's absolutely right, yes.
Hopefully, a long-term solution will be found.
The hope is that we can get a long-term solution as well, because it would be very wrong if a really excellent adoption agency weren't allowed to continue to operate within the conscience of its employees. After all, in the whole of its history, as far as they can tell from the records, the society has only once ever been approached by a homosexual couple, and they then, of course, show them down the road to another agency.
And so we come to the end of our programme for today. You can hear it all again in whole or in its parts if you go to our website at vaticanradio.org and click on English. I am Sister Janet Ferns. Until we meet again, may God bless you.
You've been listening to the English programme of Vatican Radio. Laudato Jesus Christus.